It doesn't. Bloody fucking hell. Talk about schizophrenic. The woman is a complete nutter. She's gorgeous, sure, but she's got issues. And I make it a rule not to stick my dick into a girl who might want to chop it off right after. I sit in the center row of the SUV, fuming on the way back to the hotel. Can I offer you a bit of advice, Prince Nicholas? Tommy asks. I may have been mumbling out loud. Shut up, Tommy, Logan says from the driver's seat. Proximity breeds familiarity, and the lads in my personal security team have been with me for a few years. They're young, in their 20s, but their youthful looks belie lethal skills. Like a pack of German shepherd pups, their bark may not seem so dangerous, but their bite is vicious. It's all right. I meet Tommy's light brown eyes in the rearview mirror, where he sits behind me. Offer away. He scratches his head. I think the lass was embarrassed.
Embarrassed?
Aye. It's like my younger sister, Janie. She's a good-looking girl, but one day she had a zit on her forehead that was so big it made her look like a dickicorn, and she was walking.
James, in the front passenger seat, reads my mind.
What the fuck is a dickicorn?
It's an expression, Tommy explains. James angles around to look at Tommy, his blue eyes crinkled.
An expression for what?
For someone with something big coming out of their forehead that looks like a cock.
Wouldn't it be a unicock, then?
James wonders.
For Christ's sake, Logan cuts in. Would you forget about the fucking unicorn or dickicock or whatever the hell it is?
It doesn't make any sense, James argues.
And let Tommy finish his story. We're never going to hear the end at this rate.
James throws up his hands, grumbling.
Fine, but it still doesn't make any sense.
For the record, my semantic vote goes to Unidick. Tommy continues.
Right. So Janie's walking home from school with Brandon, a lad from up the street, who she'd been crushing on for weeks, and my da's home early from work, sitting on the stoop. So he says, Hey, Janie. You want me to grab some cream from the pharmacy to kill that monster on your forehead? And Janie goes crazy, screeching like a banshee at my da, saying she'd never talk to him again, making him feel 2 cents worth of shit. And my poor da, I mean, he was trying to be helpful. But what I figured was, no girl wants her troubles rubbed in her face. Janie knew she was a dickicorn. She didn't need it said out loud. But she especially didn't want it said in front of a lad she likes.
He meets my eyes in the mirror.
It's a pride thing, you know? It wasn't that Miss Hammond didn't want your help. Maybe she was embarrassed that she needed it.
I don't go back to Amelia's the next morning. Not because I'm not thinking about Olivia, but because I have a prior commitment, a visit to the boys' home in the Bronx. One of many institutions funded by the Prince and Princess of Pembroke charity. It's a private facility that takes in children who've been orphaned, an alternative to the overrun foster care system. I meet with the director, an enthusiastic, middle-aged man with tired eyes. He gives me a tour of the dorm room, the gymnasium, and the cafeteria. They do their best to cheer the place up with brightly colored paint and artwork on the walls, but it still resembles a prison for kindergartners. The hollow-faced, curious glances of the children who live here follow my every move. We venture out into the play yard, which consists of a fenced-in concrete-paved square with a single basketball net. I tell the director to contact my personal secretary, because every child deserves to have a swing set. My father used to say when it came to charities, helping people was the easy part. It was choosing whom to help first, allocating resources, that kept him up at night. A few youngsters color with chalk on one side, while the group plays basketball on the other, but my eyes are drawn to one small boy in a red T-shirt, who looks about 7 years old, sitting on the sidelines. It's a view I'm familiar with. When I was a teen, I had more friends than I'd ever need. Everyone wanted a piece of me. But earlier, I was an oddity. And children, like Mother Nature, can be breathtakingly cruel. As I walk toward the boy, Logan reminds the group of staff members behind me, "No pictures today." Big brown eyes that say they've seen more than they ever should regard me with interest as I sit down beside him.
"Hey."
"Hi." I hold out my hand. "I'm Nicholas." He shakes it.
"Freddy."
"That's a good name. My middle name is Freddy. It means peaceful ruler." He kicks at the concrete with the tip of his worn sneaker.
"Are you really a prince?"
"I really am."
"You don't look like a prince."
I pat the lapels of my gray suit jacket. Must have left my crown in another suit. I'm always losing the darn thing. I'm rewarded with a flash of white teeth and a giggle. "Don't feel like playing today, Freddy." He shrugs. "Do you like living here?" "I've seen the reports. Mental health stats, graduation rates. But if you want the real story behind what goes on in a place like this, it's always best to go straight to the source."
"It's okay."
He bobs his little head.
"I used to live with my auntie. She was nice, but she died."
The sadness in those few words pierces like the prick of a steel nail. "I'm sorry." He nods, because he's heard the condolences before, but they don't change anything.
"The teachers here are nice. They smile a lot. But my auntie used to bake cookies. They don't give us cookies here."
"Smiles are good, but cookies are always better." A spark of life flashes across his face. A connection.
"I know, right? Do you know what they make us eat for dessert?"
"What?" I ask, riveted.
"Fruit salad."
I make a disgusted face.
"Oh, no. Not fruit."
"Yes,"
he insists.
"And not even with whipped cream. Fruit's not dessert."
He wags his finger at me.
"You should talk to someone about that. Set him straight."
"It'll be at the top of my list." And then a thought comes to me. An impressive thought. "Freddy, do you like pie?" He looks shocked that I even asked.
"Well, yeah. Everybody likes pie. There's fruit in it, but it's pie."
The director walks up to us. "How are we doing? Can I get you anything, Prince Nicholas?" "Yes," I tell him, scanning the playground, counting. "You can get me a bus." An hour later, I walk into Amelia's like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, trailing 50 children behind me. Behind the counter, Olivia's eyes flare round, surprised to see me, and to see the gaggle of little ones swarming her coffee shop like adorable locusts.
"Hey, what's going on?"
I gesture to the young man beside me. "Olivia, this is Freddy. Freddy, meet Olivia."
"Sup?"
She smiles so sweetly.
"Good to meet you, Freddy."
Out of the side of his mouth, he says in a hushed tone,
"You were right. She's really pretty."
"I told you so," I hush back. Then I address her directly. "Olivia, we have a problem that needs immediate rectification."
"Sounds serious," she teases.
"Oh, it is,"
Freddy pipes up. "My friend Freddy here hasn't had a decent dessert in months."
"Months,"
Freddy stresses. My eyes meet Olivia's. "You wouldn't happen to have 30 extra pies around, would you?" Warmth spreads across her face. And gratitude.
"As a matter of fact, I do."
A few hours later, after Olivia's stock has been completely demolished, and every pie paid for courtesy of the royal charity, Olivia and I stand side by side as the delighted, pastry-stuffed children waddle out the door. Freddy high-fives me as he goes.
"Catch you later, Nick."
"Not if I catch you first," I wink. When the last one is loaded on and the bus pulls away, it's just Olivia and I, alone.
"Did you do this just to impress me?"
I slide my hands into my pockets, rocking on my heels, Depends. Are you impressed?
I am.
I can't hold back my grin.
Good.
But in all honesty, I didn't just do it for you. The one perk of this job is getting the chance to make kids like Freddy happy. Even if it's just for the day. She turns to me.
You're good with them. With kids.
I like children. They haven't developed ulterior motives yet. The air shifts between us, becomes thick with want and words not yet said.
I'm sorry about flipping out on you yesterday,
Olivia tells me quietly. It's all right.
No.
She shakes her head, and a lock of hair falls from her top knot, drifting across her smooth cheek.
I overreacted. I'm sorry.
I catch the curl, rubbing it between my fingers. I'll try to keep my nose out of your business. And I just can't resist. I'll focus on getting it into your pants instead. Olivia rolls her eyes, but she's laughing, because exasperation is part of my charm. After a moment, her smile stills and she takes a deep breath, the way a first-time bungee jumper would the moment before leaping.
Ask me again, Nicholas.
It's a bit frightening how much I like the sound of my name on her lips. It could easily become my favorite word, which is damn arrogant, even for me. I want to take you out, Olivia, tonight. What do you say? Then she gives me a word I like hearing from her even more.
Yes.
Chapter 7. Olivia. I have a date. Holy shit. How does this look? A date with a gorgeous, green-eyed, walks-around-like-a-sex-god man who's capable of making me orgasm with the sound of his voice alone. Little House on the Prairie called. Nellie Olson wants her dress back. Oh, and he's a prince. A real, live, actual prince. Who kisses a lady's hand and makes orphans smile. And who wants in my pants. Holy shit. He doesn't give off the white horse riding, 100% nice guy vibe, though. He definitely has some asshole tendencies. But that's okay. I like a little jerky in my men. Sue me. It keeps things interesting. Exciting. There's only one problem. What about this one? I hold up a hanger with a black pantsuit clinging to it. Great, if you plan on going to a Halloween party as Hillary Clinton from 2008. I have nothing to wear. Usually, when women say we have nothing to wear, we mean we have nothing new to wear. Nothing that makes us feel beautiful or hides the few extra pounds we've put on because we've been hitting the salted caramel ice cream a little too hard lately. And is it just me? Or do they freaking make everything in salted caramel flavor these days? It's my kryptonite. But anyway, that's not the case here, as my darling sister helpfully points out while rummaging through my closet. Jesus Christ, Liv! Have you even bought any new clothes since 2005? I bought new underwear last week. Bikini style, cotton, in hot pink and electric blue. They were on sale, but I would have bought them even if they weren't. Because if I happen to get struck by an Uber driver or hit on the head in some freak scaffolding accident, there's no way I'm showing up in the emergency room in worn, holy panties. That's one rock bottom I refuse to reach. Maybe you should just wear the underwear and a trench coat. Ellie throws me a suggestive eyebrow wiggle. I have a feeling his hotness would like that. I have a feeling she's right. Interesting idea, but I don't own a trench coat. I wear a black skirt and white blouse to work, and I work all the time. Otherwise, I have a few pairs of jeans, old sweats, older t-shirts, a confirmation dress I wore when I was 13, and a pantsuit I graduated high school in. I fall straight back on my bed, dramatically, the way someone would drop into a pool, or off a building ledge. Fitting. You could borrow something of mine, Ellie starts, but I'm 5'6". I have boobs. Nice ones, actually. And while I'm not Kim Kardashian, I also have an ass. Ellie is 5'0" and can still buy her jeans at Gap Kids. I scroll through the contacts on my phone, looking for the hotel number Nicholas saved there this afternoon. I noticed that he didn't put his cell number in, but he probably has to keep that a secret for national security or something. I'm just going to call him and be honest. Tell him, I don't know what you had in mind for tonight, but we need to keep it jeans and t-shirt casual. Ellie dives on me like I'm a grenade that's about to explode. Are you nuts? She wrestles the phone from my hand and bounds off the bed. If you want jeans and a t-shirt, you could go out with Donnie D'Amico from down the street. He'd give up a testicle to date you. Prince Nicholas doesn't do casual. I'm the embodiment of informality. I have neither the time nor energy for fuss or muss. Nothing about me is Uptown Girl, but Nicholas is definitely interested in doing me. Oh God, now I'm starting to sound like him. I lift my head. You don't know that. Ellie opens the laptop on my dresser and a few key taps later, scrolls through image after image of Nicholas, wearing suits and tuxedos and more suits. In some of the pictures, he's alone, but every time there's a woman beside him, she's wearing a gown, stunning, shimmery, and divine. His casual is at least a cocktail dress. She's right, and I have 2 hours before Nicholas picks me up, not nearly enough time to run out and buy something. Plus, that would require using the emergency somebody-better-be-bleeding-from-an-artery credit card. It's like I'm living an episode of reality TV, a full-fledged fashion-fucking-emergency. Except no camera crew and makeover expert fairy godmother is going to pop out of my bathroom. Although, I may have something better. I roll off the bed and sprint down the hall, through the living room, to the door that leads to the downstairs kitchen. Marty! Come up here! 5 minutes later, Marty's standing in my bedroom, staring at the pile of clothes I just dropped in his arms. What the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Salvation Army? I gesture to the clothes. I need you to help me figure out how to turn this. I swing around and point at the picture of Nicholas on the laptop with the tall blonde wearing a bold fuchsia halter dress. Into that. I'm not stereotyping. I've seen Marty outside of work, and he's an amazing dresser. Sophisticated, sleek, with a hint of flash. He looks at the clothes, then dumps them on the bed. Let me explain something, baby doll. You are beautiful, inside and out, but I've known I like dick since I was 12 years old. Give me a tall, dark lumbersexual, and I'll dress him so fine you wouldn't want to unwrap him even if it was the first night of Hanukkah. He traces the air around me. But your squishy bits, I don't know what to do with. I cover my eyes with one hand. What the hell was I thinking? Why did I agree to go out with Nicholas? It's going to be a total shit show. The last date I went on was at a laundromat. Not even kidding. Our washing machine broke, and I spent 4 nights making flirty eye contact and small talk across the folding table with a super cute guy. On the 5th night, he bought me a slice of pizza. Then we made out on top of the heavy loaders during the spin cycle. It was only after, when I noticed the floral comforter, bras and panties in his colors wash, that he admitted to having a live-in girlfriend. Bastard. 6 months later, and I still can't look at a bottle of Clorox without feeling dirty. Marty gently pulls my hand down from my eyes. He taps my nose and smiles. But I know somebody who does. Turns out Bibbidi, Marty's oldest younger sister, has a new job as a receptionist at City Couture, a high-end fashion magazine, which means she has the keys to the kingdom, also known as the sample closet. A mythical, magical, warehouse-sized room filled with dresses and gowns of every shade, size, and style, as well as shoes to match and every accessory known to man, all of which Bibbidi can use when she's on the clock, and after, as long as her dragon lady boss who makes Cruella de Vil look stable doesn't find out. She agrees to take the risk for me, and I'm not sure I'm okay with that. But Marty assures me she owes him big time. Something about making up for crashing his beloved but piece-of-shit Chevy Nova in high school. And that's why Bibbidi Ginsburg shows up at our apartment 40 minutes later, her arms laden with dresses and bags. And that's how, an hour after that, I end up wearing an Alexander McQueen light blue sleeveless dress with a cut-out back that falls a few inches above my knee. It makes me feel pretty. Still me. Comfortable, but an elegant, polished version of me. Ellie flat irons my hair into a long, black, shiny curtain while I do my makeup. A bit of powder, a hint of blush, 3 coats of mascara, and a muted red lipstick that highlights the shape of my mouth Nicholas seems to like so much. "These will be perfect," Bibbidi exclaims, waving a pair of obsidian high-heeled ankle boots around like a magic wand.
"Mm-hmm," Marty approves. "Fuck me boots if I ever saw 'em."
"I can't wear those," I try to protest. "I'll break my neck. There's still snow on the ground." "You're going from the coffee shop to the car," my sister counters. "You're not walking the Appalachian Trail, Liv." Bibbidi points to my laptop, still open to Nicholas's delicious picture. "My brother wasn't messing with me."
"That's who you're going out with?"
I have to fight not to sigh like a dreamy schoolgirl. "That's him." She enjoys another look. "Oh, honey, you are definitely wearing the fuck me boots." And that settles that. 20 minutes later, I wait alone in the coffee shop, standing, so the dress doesn't wrinkle. The room is dim, illuminated only by the muted overhead lamp above the counter and a few twinkling battery-operated candles on the tables near the window. I close my eyes and swear to myself that I'll remember how this feels, this moment, this night. Because I'm right on the edge, standing on that thrilling, wonderful precipice where everything is perfect, where the dreams flickering through my head of how tonight will go are flawless. My witty, irresistible banter, Nicholas's sexy chivalry, our funny flirtations. We'll laugh, we'll dance, we'll share a goodnight kiss, maybe more. I'm Dorothy, gazing down at the Emerald City. I'm Wendy, rising in the air after my first pinch of pixie dust. I laugh to myself. I'm Cinderella, stepping into her coach to go to the ball. And even if this night is all there is, I won't forget it. I'll hold this memory close, savor it, cherish it. It will make the hard times just a little easier, the lonely moments just a little less cold. When Ellie leaves for school, when I'm making pies before dawn in the kitchen day after day, I'll remember this feeling and I'll smile. This will get me through. I open my eyes. Nicholas is on the other side of the coffee shop door, watching me through the glass. His eyes are warm and wild, a heated jungle green. And then, slowly, he smiles, broad and big, dimples coming out to play. My chest constricts with unexpected emotion, and my own smile comes unbidden, easy, because it all just feels so good. He walks through the door, stopping a few feet in front of me, both our gazes consuming each other. His black dress shoes are shiny, and I wonder if someone polished them before he came. I've never dated someone who gets his shoes shined. His slacks are charcoal and perfectly fitted, the shape of strong, lean thighs visible as he moves, with the hint of outline of what must be a magnificent cock teasing through the fabric. I try to hide that I'm looking, but I am. His tapered shirt is silver-gray, no tie, the 2 top buttons open at the neck, and my fingers rub together, itching to touch him there. A black sports jacket covers the shirt, sharp and expensive-looking. There's a dusting of dark stubble across his jaw, and I want to touch him there, too. The combination of 5 o'clock shadow and rebel strands of brown hair that fall over his forehead give him a roguish, wicked look that makes my bones feel liquid and my breasts suddenly heavy and tingling. Our eyes finally meet. He's still staring at me, lips parted, and I can't get a read on his expression. As the moments stretch on, a bud of nervousness blooms in my stomach, its vine wrapping around my vocal cords.
I wasn't sure what you had planned for tonight. You didn't tell me.
Those long lashes blink, but he doesn't say anything. I raise my hand toward the kitchen.
I can go change if this isn't...
No.
Nicholas steps forward, his hand up.
No, don't change a thing. You're absolutely perfect.
And he's looking at me like he never wants to stop.
I didn't expect. I mean, you're lovely, but...
Wasn't there a movie about a king who stuttered? I tease him. Was he a relative of yours? He chuckles, and call me crazy, but I swear Nicholas's cheeks go slightly pink.
No, stuttering doesn't run in my family.
He shakes his head.
You just knocked me on my ass.
And now I'm beaming. Thank you. You look pretty great too, Prince Charming.
I actually know a Prince Charming. He's a first-class prick.
Well, now that you've tarnished a precious piece of my childhood, this better be some date, I tease.
It will be.
He holds out his hand to me.
Shall we?
My hand slides into his, easily, like it's the most natural thing in the world, like it belongs there.
Chapter 8. Nicholas. Olivia's nervous. Her hand trembles slightly in mine as I lead her toward the limousine, and I can see the rapid throb of her pulse at the base of her delicate neck. It stirs a twisted, predatory instinct in me. If she feels like running, I'll certainly chase. Especially in that dress. And those fucking boots. For several moments, all I could picture in my head was peeling the pale blue fabric from her body, slowly. The way her hands would dig into my shoulder blades, and her nails would rake my back. The sounds she'd make. Little whimpers and pants that I'd lick from her lips. And I'd lift her onto one of the tables in the coffee shop, then have her in every way I could think of, and probably a few that I haven't. And I'd leave those boots on the whole time. But her anxiousness draws out my protectiveness as well. The urge to wrap my arms around her and promise that everything will be all right. I don't think she has anyone in her life who does that for her. My thumb rubs small, soothing circles against her hand as James opens the car door for us. Olivia waves to him. Good evening, miss. Inside the car, she greets Logan and Tommy in the front seat. Logan nods and gives her a smile in the rearview mirror.
Hello, Miss Olivia.
Tommy replies, with another damn wink. Tosser. I raise the privacy glass so it's just she and I alone. It's also mostly soundproof. She'd have to moan my name very, very loudly for anyone to hear, but I bet I could make it happen. You don't have to do that, you know. My chin lifts toward the front of the car.
What? Be polite?
They wouldn't think you were rude if you didn't say hello. They're good lads, Olivia, but they're also employees, and employees don't expect to be addressed. They're like furniture, not really noticed until they're needed.
Wow!
Olivia leans back against the leather seat, regarding me.
Somebody's pompous tank is pretty full.
I shrug. Occupational hazard. And as prickish as it may sound, it's still true. She pushes her hair behind her ear, fidgeting, as if she doesn't wear it down often, which is a shame.
Are they always with you?
Yes.
What about when you're home?
Security's there too. All maids. My butler.
So you're never just... alone? Can't walk around naked if you feel like it?
I imagine Fergus's reaction to my bare balls resting on the 16th century Queen Anne sofa. Or even better, my grandmother's reaction. And I laugh. No, I can't. But the more important question is, do you walk around naked? She lifts one alluring shoulder.
Sometimes.
Let's hang out at your apartment tomorrow, I tell her with an urgent, straight face. All day. I'll clear my schedule. Olivia squeezes my hand like she's telling me to behave, but the gentle flush on her cheeks says she's enjoying the conversation.
So, the first night we met, if I'd gone back to your hotel room with you, they would have been there while we were...
fucking. Yes. But not in the same room. I'm not into audiences.
That's so weird. It's like the ultimate walk of shame.
She lost me. How do you mean? Olivia's voice lowers shyly, even though the boys can't possibly hear her.
They would have known what we were doing, maybe even heard us, It's like you live in a perpetual frat house.
You're presuming they give a damn, and they don't. I raise her hand to my mouth, kissing the back. It's soft against my lips, like a rose petal, and I wonder if she's as soft all over. When I head into the lavatory, on some level they realize I'm going to take a piss, but it's really not high on their list of things to think about. She doesn't seem convinced, and if tonight is going to end like I'm hoping, she'll need to get over the security team. Challenge accepted. I'm used to the curious stares and whispers of strangers when I go out in public, the way a lion at the zoo is used to annoying children banging on the glass enclosure, just waiting for the day it breaks. I don't notice them much anymore, and as we're led to the private room at the back of the restaurant, I don't notice them now. Except Olivia does, and she takes exception to it, staring the patrons down for their rudeness, until they're forced to look away. Like she's defending me, sticking up for me. It's very cute. The overly friendly hostess leans closer than she should, flashing me an open invitation with her eyes. I'm used to that, too. Olivia notices as well, but, interestingly, seems less confident about how she should respond. So I respond on her behalf, resting my hand on the small of her back, possessively, and guiding her into the plush, cushioned seat. Then, after I've taken my own seat, I drape my arm across the back of Olivia's chair, near enough to stroke her bare shoulder if I want, making it clear that the only woman I'm interested in tonight is the one beside me. After the sommelier pours our wine, Olivia prefers white because red knocks her on her ass, and the chef comes to our table to introduce himself and describe the custom menu he's created for us, we're finally left alone. So, you run the coffee shop with your parents? I ask. Olivia sips her wine, her little pink tongue peeking out to clean her bottom lip. It's just me and my dad, actually. My mom died 9 years ago. She was mugged on the subway. It ended badly. There's an echo of pain in her words, one I'm familiar with. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
She pauses a moment, seems to be debating something, and then confesses.
I Googled you.
Oh?
The video of your parents' funeral came up.
I nod. The search engines do seem to favor that one. Her smile is small and flutteringly self-conscious.
I didn't watch it at the time, when it was live, but I remember it being on TV all day, on every channel.
She raises those stunning, shining eyes to mine.
The day we buried my mom was the worst day of my life. It must have been awful for you, to go through the worst day of yours with all those people watching, filming it, taking pictures.
Most people don't think about that part of things. They focus on the money, the castles, the fame, the privilege. Not the hard parts, the human parts. It was awful, I say quietly. Then I take a breath and shake off the sadness that seeped into the conversation. But, in the immortal words of Kanye, that which don't kill me only makes me stronger. She laughs, and like everything about her, it's delightful.
I didn't think a guy like you listened to Kanye.
I wink. I'm full of surprises. Before our meal arrives, visitors stop by our table. I introduce Olivia and speak with them briefly about upcoming business. After they walk away, Olivia gives me an owl-eyed look.
That was the mayor?
Yes.
And Cardinal O'Brien, the Archbishop of New York?
That's right.
They're two of the most powerful men in the state, in the country.
My lips slide into a grin because she's impressed. Again. At times like this, being me isn't so awful. The palace works with both men on various initiatives. She fidgets with the roll on her bread plate, tearing it up into tiny pieces. You can ask me anything, Olivia. No need to be shy. Shyness has no place in my plans for this girl. I want her bold, wild, and reckless. She munches on a piece of bread, head slightly tilted, watching, thinking it over. And I'm struck by the charming way she chews. Christ, what a strange thing to notice. After she swallows and the pale, smooth skin of her throat ripples in an erotic way, well, a way I find erotic, she asks,
"Why didn't you kiss his ring?"
I take a sip of wine. I outrank him. That makes her grin.
"You outrank the Archbishop? What about the Pope? Have you ever met him?"
"Not the current one. But I was introduced to the former when he came to visit Wesco when I was 8. Seemed like a decent bloke. He smelled like butterscotch. He carried sweets in the pockets of his vestments. He gave me one after he blessed me."
"Did you kiss his ring?"
She's more relaxed now. The question's coming easier. "I didn't, no."
"Why not?"
I lean forward, closer to her, elbows on the table. Grandmother would be appalled. But etiquette doesn't stand a snowball's chance against Olivia's sweet scent. It's roses tonight, with the slightest hint of jasmine, like a new garden on the first day of spring. I inhale deeply, trying to be discreet. 2 points for me, because all I really want to do is rest my nose in the fragrant groove of her cleavage before sliding down, lifting her dress, and sinking my face between her smooth, creamy thighs. And that's where I'd stay, all fucking night. And now my cock strains against my pants like a prisoner in a cage. What was the question again? I take another drink and run my palm over the bulge, adjusting, trying to get some relief, and failing. "I'm sorry, Olivia, what was that?"
"Why didn't you kiss the Pope's ring?"
I've got a raging hard-on and we're talking about the Holy See. One-way ticket to hell? Purchased. "The church teaches that the Pope has the ear of God, that he's closer to God than any other person on earth. But kings, at least how the story goes, are descended from God. Which means the only person I bow to, the only ring I kiss, is my grandmother's, because she's the only person on earth above me." Olivia's eyes rake me up and down, and one dark eyebrow rises playfully.
"Do you really believe that?"
"That I'm descended from the Almighty?" I grin devilishly. "I've been told my cock is a gift from God. You should test that opinion tonight. You know, for religion."
"Very smooth," she laughs.
"But no, I don't actually believe it." Olivia watches as I rub my lower lip and give her my real answer. "I think it's a story, the kind that men have always made up to justify their power over the many." She thinks on that for a moment, then says,
"I saw a picture of your grandmother online. She looks like such a sweet little old lady."
I give her my real answer on that, too. "She's a battle axe with a chunk of concrete where her heart should be." Olivia chokes on her wine. She dabs at her mouth with her napkin and looks at me like she's got me pegged.
"So, what you're saying is, you love her."
At my sardonic expression, she adds,
"When it comes to family, I think we only insult the ones we really love."
I dip my head closer and whisper,
"I agree, but don't let that get out. Her Majesty will never let me live it down."
She taps my hand.
"Your secret's safe with me."
Our main course arrives. Salmon, colorfully plated with dashes and swirls of bright orange and green sauces, with an intricate structure of purple kale and lemon rind on top.
"It's so pretty,"
Olivia sighs.
"Maybe we shouldn't eat it."
I smirk. I enjoy eating pretty things. I bet her pussy is gorgeous. Throughout the meal, the conversation flows as easily as the wine. We talk about everything and nothing in particular. My studies at university, the work I do when I'm not making public appearances, the behind-the-scenes details of running a coffee shop, as well as what it was like for her growing up in the city.
My mom used to give me $3 in quarters every week,
Olivia tells me in a faraway voice,
so I wouldn't nag her about wanting to give money to the homeless people we'd pass when we were out. I try to spread it around. I didn't know how little a quarter was actually worth. I thought I was helping, and I wanted to help as many as I could. But if they had a pet with them, a sad-looking dog or cat, that always hit me hardest, and I'd give them 2 or 3 quarters. Even then, I think I understood that people could be such assholes, but animals are always innocent.
When dessert is served, a frosted airy pastry in a bed of custard and caramel sauce, the topic turns to siblings.
And my father put the money from my mother's life insurance policy into a trust. It can only be used for education expenses, which is good because otherwise it would have been gone a long time ago.
Like many of her fellow New Yorkers, Olivia is an animated talker. Her hands flutter and weave like 2 graceful, translucent doves.
There's just enough now for Ellie's first semester at NYU. I'll worry about the second semester when the time comes. She wants to live in the dorm, to get the full college experience. But I worry about her. I mean, I think she could change the world. I really do. Cure cancer or invent whatever comes after the internet. What she can't do is remember where she put her house keys, or understand that a checkbook has to balance once in a while. And she's gullible. Phishing emails were invented for people like my sister.
I lean forward, nodding. I understand completely. My brother Henry has so much potential, and he's happily pissing it away. After that video you mentioned, the press christened him the boy who couldn't walk the walk, who would never measure up. It's a prophecy he's gone out of his way to fulfill. Olivia raises her glass.
To little brothers and sisters. Can't live with them. Can't have them banished from the kingdom.
We tap our glasses and drink. After dinner, I suggest we go back to my hotel suite, said the horny spider to the scrumptious fly. And she agreed. The ride in the lift to the top floor is silent, with James and Logan in front, and Olivia beside me in the rear, giving me secret, sneaking glances. The doors open into the foyer of the penthouse, and the hotel butler, David, I think his name is there to take our coats.
Thank you.
Olivia smiles and David gives her a silent nod. As we step into the main living room, I watch her, the reactions and emotions that play over her features. How her lashes flare when she looks up, taking in the enormous crystal chandelier and the hand-painted golden mural on the ceiling. The way the corners of her mouth rise with a bit of wonder at the furniture and marble floors, all the little signs of luxury. When she turns to the full wall of glass that offers a breathtaking view of the twinkling lighted city, Olivia gasps, and lust surges through me like I've been struck by lightning. She glides towards the window, gazing out. And damn, she makes a pretty picture. Pale, bare arms, rivulets of long black hair that fall just above the swirl of a perfect, tight arse. I like the look of her here, in my rooms, amongst my things. I'd like the view even more if she weren't still wearing her dress.
Can we go outside?
Olivia asks. I nod, then open the door to the large stone balcony. She steps out and I follow her. The temperature was milder today, and the snow has been removed, of course. Olivia's gaze dances over the full potted evergreens that bookend the beige cushioned furniture, and the glow of the burning fire pits in the corners casts the area in a warm orange light.
So this is like your prison yard?
She teases. That's right. They let me out for fresh air and exercise, but only if I behave.
Not too shabby.
I shrug. It'll do. We walk side by side along the walled edge, holding hands, and I'm reminded of my first social event. I'm all worked up and exhilarated, and at the same time mildly terrified of screwing up.
So what's it like?
She asks softly.
Having everything set, knowing exactly what you're going to do for the rest of your life.
You have the coffee shop. It's not so different.
Yeah, but my family needed me to run it. I didn't choose that.
I snort. Neither did I. She thinks that over, then asks,
But are you excited? Like Simba, are you all, I just can't wait to be king?
Simba was a fool. I shake my head and push at the hair that brushes my forehead. And considering me being king would mean my grandmother was dead. Excited wouldn't be the word I'd use. I slip into interview mode. But I look forward to fulfilling my birthright and leading Wesco with honor, dignity, and grace. Olivia tugs my hand to a stop. Her eyes flicker over my face, her lips curled.
I call bullshit.
What?
Total bullshit. Honor, dignity, grace.
She imitates, accent included.
Those are pretty words, but they don't mean anything. How does it really feel?
How does it really feel? I feel like a fawn trying out its legs for the first time. Wobbly and strange. Because no one's ever dug past my pat answer. No one's ever asked me for more. For real and genuine. I don't know if anyone's ever actually cared. But Olivia wants those answers. I can see it in the soft curves of her face as she waits patiently. She wants to know me. And my chest tightens desperately, because I suddenly want the exact same thing. The best way to describe it, I guess, I lick my lips. Imagine you're in medical school, studying to be a surgeon. You've read all the books, observed the surgeries being performed. You've prepared. And for your whole life, everyone around you has said what an amazing surgeon you'll be. It's your destiny, your calling. My eyes are drawn to hers, and I don't know what she sees in mine, but I find comfort in hers. Enough to go on. But then that moment comes, the day when it's your turn to go it alone, and they put the scalpel in your hand, and it's all up to you. That, I imagine, is quite a holy fuck moment.
I bet.
That's what the idea of becoming king feels like. A holy fuck moment. Olivia takes a step forward but loses her balance, tripping on the pointy heel of her shoe, and I catch her. She collides with my chest, my arms around her, meeting at her lower back, and she stays just there. With her gloriously soft breasts against my hard chest, we freeze, staring, breaths mingling.
Frigging boots,
she whispers, so near to my mouth. A smile tugs at me. I like the frigging boots. Seeing you in them, and nothing else, would really make my day. And then my head is lowering, and Olivia is reaching up. Each of us drawing towards the other. Her silky hair slides over my fingers as I cup her cheek. My smile fades away, replaced with something more raw, more desperate. Heat and hunger. Because I'm going to kiss her now. And when the thump of her heartbeat quickens against my chest, I know she knows it. Wants it. Just as much as I do. My nose brushes hers and those dark blue eyes close slowly. And then Logan clears his throat loudly, meaningfully.
Ahem.
I swallow back a curse and look up.
What?
Camera flash.
Fuck.
Where? He lifts his chin.
Roof of the high-rise. 9 o'clock.
I turn my back on the city, keeping Olivia tucked against my chest. We should head inside. Olivia looks adorably dazed. She peeks over my shoulder at the dark sky, then lets me guide her inside.
Does that happen a lot?
Unfortunately. Long-range camera lenses, as accurate as rifles. Back inside, Olivia's lips stretch into a long, wide yawn, and I try to stop the chain of indecent thoughts that follow. Damn, but her mouth is beautiful. If I don't get in there soon, it may actually kill me.
Excuse me.
She covers her mouth.
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. I glance at my watch. It's after midnight. She was on her feet all day and has to be up again in 4 hours. I should have picked you up earlier. She shakes her head.
This has been wonderful. I can't remember the last time I had so much fun. Not in forever, I think.
I want to ask her to stay. It would be so easy for her to slip out of that dress and into the magnificent bed just down the hall. But she'd say no. I can feel it. Too soon. And she wouldn't get a wink of fucking sleep anyway. I'd keep her up all night. I gesture toward the door, like the gentleman I'm not. Let's get you home, then. Olivia's head rests against my arm the whole ride back to her place. Our legs are aligned and pressing, our hands entwined on top of my thigh. I turn my head just slightly and inhale the addictive jasmine scent of her hair. There's a cable show. My strange addiction. One of the most insane things I ever saw. One episode was about a wanker who was obsessed with sniffing women's hair. I'm sorry I judged you, wanker. I get it now. You smell fantastic. She angles her head up, her eyes light and mischievous. Then she presses her face against my pectoral and inhales so deeply she practically snorts my shirt.
I like the way you smell too, Nicholas.
The car pulls up to the curb and rolls to a stop. And I'm about to ask if I can sniff her again tomorrow, but Logan's voice comes through the speaker. Stay in the car, Your Grace. There's a vagrant outside Miss Hammond's door. Tommy and I'll take care of it. Olivia jerks up away from me, going tense in an instant. She looks out the window, white-knuckling the armrest.
Oh, no!
And her words barely register before she shoves the door open and dashes out.
Chapter 9. Olivia. Oh, no. To little girls, fathers are heroes. At least the good ones are. Tall and handsome, strong but patient, with a deep voice that speaks the wisest truths. My father was a good one. A chaser away of monsters under the bed, a sneaker of cookies before dinner, an encourager, a protector, a teacher of what a real man is supposed to be. His hands were big and calloused, working man's hands, powerful, but gentle with us. He used to hold my mother's hand like she was a precious work of art. Oh, how he loved my mother. It was in every move he made, every word he said. His love for her was the light in his eyes and the breath in his lungs. I look like him, his black hair, the shape of his eyes, his long limbs. It used to make me proud to resemble him because, like all little girls, I thought my father was unconquerable, invincible, the wall that could never crumble. But I was wrong. One terrible day, one horrible moment on a subway platform, and all that strength just dissolved, the way a pillar candle melts down into a heap of wax, into something unrecognizable. Daddy? I kneel down. Behind me, Nicholas's approaching footsteps stutter to a stop. And the mortification nips at my heels as I imagine how this must look to him. But I don't have time for that now. Daddy, what happened? His eyes struggle to find mine, to stay open, and whiskey fumes burn my nostrils.
Libby, hey, sweetie. Something's wrong with the lock. Couldn't get my key in.
He tried using the walk-up door to our apartment. He could have just gone through the coffee shop. But he doesn't know about the broken lock that I still haven't gotten around to fixing. His keys slip out of his grasp.
Damn.
I scoop them off the cold sidewalk. It's okay, Dad. I'll help you. With a spine-straightening breath, I stand up, turn around and face Nicholas, and my voice goes straight to autopilot. You should go. I have to take care of this. His gaze darts to my father on the ground, then back to me.
Go.
I can't just leave you to... It's fine, I grit out, teeth crunching and embarrassment creeping up my neck. He's 3 times your size. How do you plan to get him upstairs?
I've done it before.
In a nanosecond, he goes from pitying to pissed, and he uses that voice again, the one that bent Bosco to his will, the one that says it's his way or his way.
You're not doing it now.
I know what he's trying to do, and I hate it. He wants to be noble, helpful, trying to be the hero. Isn't that what princes do? But it just makes me feel shittier. I've been my own hero for a long time. I know how it's done. This is none of your business. This is my business. I told you yesterday.
If you fall down those steps, you'll snap your fucking neck,
Nicholas says harshly, leaning down.
I won't risk that because you've got more pride than sense. I'm helping you, Olivia. Deal with it.
Then he walks right past me and crouches down. His voice grows gentler.
Mr. Hammond.
And my father slurs.
Who are you? Nicholas. My name is Nicholas. I'm a friend of Olivia's. It looks like you're having a bit of trouble, so I'm going to help get you upstairs. All right. Yeah. Damn keys aren't working.
Nicholas nods, then motions Logan forward. They heave my father up, one on either side, his arms flung over their shoulders.
Olivia, get the door,
he tells me. We go through the coffee shop, because there's more room that way. And as I watch them carry my father through the kitchen and up the stairs, his head dangling forward on his neck like a newborn, his legs useless, I realize that this is a really, really bad night. The best I would have been able to do was drag him inside, get a pillow and blanket, and spend the rest of the night on the floor with him. But even knowing that, it doesn't stop the humiliation that's burning under my skin. And it only flames hotter when they move through our threadbare living room, messy with strewn shoes and papers because I didn't have time to straighten up. If things had gone the way I'd wanted, I would have made it look pretty, quaint, with fresh flowers and plumped throw pillows, not like this. In his bedroom, they put my father on the bed. I squeeze past Nicholas and get the dark blue blanket off the chair in the corner. I lay it over my father, tucking him in. His eyes are closed and his lips open, but he doesn't snore. There's more gray than black now in the thick stubble on his chin. Slowly, I lean over and kiss his forehead, because even though he's not my hero anymore, he's still my dad. Silently, the three of us file back downstairs. My arms wrap around my middle, stiff and tight, and my skin feels prickly, too sensitive. In my head, I can already hear the words Nicholas will say.
I'll call you. This was nice. Thanks, but no thanks.
He must be relieved to dodge the bullet, probably wondering what the hell he was thinking in the first place. The only baggage a guy like him is used to a woman having is Louis Vuitton.
I'll be at the car, sir,
Logan says when we reach the coffee shop's dining area. He nods my way, then heads out the door. The silence is awkward, uncomfortable. I can feel his eyes on me, but I focus on the floor. And I cringe when he finally splits the quiet, in that smooth, perfect voice.
Olivia.
But I'm determined to rip the Band-Aid off first, beat him to the blow-off punch. I'm a New Yorker, and that's how we roll. If someone's getting kicked to the curb, you can bet your ass we're going to be the motherfucking kicker.
You should go, I nod, lifting my face but still not meeting his eyes. I want you to go.
His warm hand touches my bare arm.
Don't be angry.
I'm not angry, I deny with quick, jerking shakes of my head. I just want you to leave.
My throat clogs, salty and wet. Because I like him so much. My eyes squeeze closed, a last-ditch effort to contain the giant, ugly tears hovering on my lashes.
Please just leave!
Nicholas's hand drops from my arm, and I wait. I listen, for the sound of him walking out the door, out of my life, where he was never really supposed to be in the first place. But about 30 seconds later, what I actually hear is something entirely different.
My grandmother talks to paintings.
My eyes sprang open. What?
When I was younger,